Hello again and welcome to I've Got a Beatles Podcast with Dave and Chris, and we're going back into the lab today, not to look at a Beatles song per se, but a very, very famous cover of a Beatles song that is written by basically Paul McCartney and given to his live-in girlfriend's brother at the time. And that's A World Without Love, made famous as a number one hit by Peter and Gordon. So, Chris, yeah. what are your thoughts on... This is a song I'm sure you've heard many times when you were growing up on... They would play it on oldies radio. What are your thoughts about this tune just initially?
I think you're exposed to it and you just think of it as like a 60s-like tune. It didn't register too heavily on my radar too much. Pleasant enough. Thought it was nice, you know, kind of like one of those. And then you're like, this is written by the Beatles. Oh, awesome.
Yeah.
You know, that's sort of how I think you feel about it. And then digging into it a little further this week, I think I've got some stronger opinions about it. So
okay.
we'll get into that. I don't want to spoil anything. I just want to say, though, the lyric "Lock Me Away." Over the last year or so,
it's kind of a very apt lyric for the past year here with "Please lock me away," yeah. Which is the line that is essentially, from what all we read, is the reason why the Beatles didn't think it was that good of a song and didn't want to record it, and John especially didn't like that line. So it's a total McCartney song. It's got all the hallmarks of McCartney, and so it makes sense that he would give it to Peter and Gordon. Peter Asher, of course, brother of Jane Asher, who Paul was dating at the time and living at the Asher home. And this was in the early 64, late 63 period. So Paul had this song a long time ago, sort of like "When I'm 64. It's one of these ones that's always, as John used to say, always been knocking around. And so does it sound like a total oldie McCartney to you?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah. For sure. And I think the thing that really makes it stand out as a McCartney is the music, the chord changes. And that's what really like makes it really sound Beatly.
Totally. Totally. But my big question for you, and I was trying to think about this, it has all the hallmarks of British invasion and it sounds like a Beatles influenced song, but I couldn't think of a Beatles song, but that they actually recorded that sounds like this. We know it sounds like a Beatles song, but I can't think of one that is really similar in terms of the sound. Can you think of anything off the top of your head?
Maybe "When I Get Home" or something like that, like possibly a little close to, I mean, just I'm thinking like more like chord changes and that kind of thing.
It's like a little too clean or something.
Oh, yeah.
Too polished.
Well, what I want to say is that clean, crystal clear, clean recording.
Yes.
Like whoever did the engineering, the recording on this one is just like absolutely nailed it. And it's stands up. And particularly the organ solo with the guitar in the background works very, very well and just sounds like pristine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this song was produced by Norman Newell and was recorded on January 21st, 1964, released about a month later in February. And as we mentioned, did reach number one in the UK and also reached number one in the U.S. So it was a big, famous song and very popular. It's got the 64-type sound of the Beatles. So you have the 12, if we go talk about the music here, you've got the 12-string guitar sound on it, electric guitar, which, yeah. I don't know, I don't know about you, but I've always found that guitar solo is kind of weak in the middle.
Well, it's more, to me, it's not more even really an organ solo.
Yeah.
With some guitar playing, like sort of riffing behind
guitar accompaniment, kind of.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. So, but it's got that. It's AABA form, very straight ahead, typical two verse bridge. And then the last verse, it's got those great chord changes. There's a minor four chord in there.
Well, that I really wanted to dig a little bit into these chord changes, because I think there's an interesting mixed mood created by the changes.
Yes.
And the song is sort of both pessimistic and optimistic at the same time. So I think that works, because he's talking about hiding with his loneliness. And but then it seems like he's like, I will wait a while and I will see my true love smile. She may come, I know not when. When she does, I'll know. So, baby, until then, it's like, I'm lonely and I want to just disappear from everybody, but things are going to work out.
Yeah. Isn't that a very Beatle-y thing, though? There's no pessimistic, not really a lot of pessimistic Beatles songs. So even if there's doubts and just not sure, I still think, you know, it's going to happen.
And he's sort of saying, like, I won't stand for this world without love. I'm going to have love no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
So I might as well, if it's going to be no love, I'll just stay in.
Yeah.
I don't need to be out there without love. So it's sort of it's an odd kind of message, but it's interesting.
Do you think some people have taken that title, song title, to be broader than it is, kind of as like my email signature file? I don't want a world without love. Or it's kind of like can have a bigger meta meaning of,
yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. It's strange, but I think that bridge where he's talking about
his true love
smile,
she may
come, I know not when, but when she does, I'll know. I think makes it less of a pessimistic sort of like almost like suicidal. I'll stay here with my loneliness and I won't stay in a world without love. You could take it the other direction and be like, oh no. Somebody needs to check up on this guy.
Well, that's an interesting point you made about the lyrics and the mixed messages that you're getting. And that is reflected musically, because you've got a lot of minor and major chords. It's a really harmonically pretty complex song. And you've got something called secondary dominance or applied chords, just the second chord. You've got E, please lock me away. And then a G sharp chord, major, which is not a typical chord you'd find in that key. And don't, then it goes to a minor, don't allow the day. And so just already kind of colored by these different qualities of chords. And
that's what I think really makes it a hit too, is it's such an interesting chord progression, and that elevates it above just a normal song, you know?
Yeah. It's not a blues or something. It's got a lot of good chromatic, interesting chords in it. So if you're a guitar player, check this out. Go sit and learn the chords, because there are some great shapes, great sounds. A couple of classic Beatlesisms. You have the minor four chord. You got an A minor for an E major. You've got a flat six chord. You've got C going down to B. I think you're right. That's what makes it really interesting musically, is its chords.
Yeah. The other element of it, obviously, is the giveaway part of it. There's a little Paul demo.
Yeah.
Which I guess Peter Asher himself has in his personal, because it was like he recorded it for him.
Isn't that weird? Like in his house. Yeah.
In his house. Here, I'll record you this little tune and then take it and wake Gordon up.
Yeah.
For him.
Yeah.
What do you think of Peter and Gordon as a entity?
I don't know much about their music except the Beatles songs they cover. Well, the songs that were written for them. So they made a couple of McCartney songs famous. So this, in addition to this one, there's one called Woman, which is another McCartney song. And they were kind of that style. So they're a singing group, like a duo, kind of like Simon and Garfunkel or the Everly Brothers, that duo style. And so I don't know much of their other music. It's kind of not made it over here, I don't think.
Yeah, I've never really done a super deep dive on Peter and Gordon.
No.
This song's good, pleasant enough.
Yeah.
And we did see the one time the two of us together went to Beatles Fest. We did see a long talk from Peter Asher, and I've always found him to be very pleasant and very a curating of the Beatles. Of course, he's on the SiriusXM channel. Yeah. Has a show there, I think, a regular show. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
And of course, he later became a famous producer and A&R guy, signing James Taylor and people like that, Mary Hopkin, all those sort of people. So, yeah, great career. But this song reminds me a little bit, you know, what I think of is that another duo, Chad and Jeremy, they did a summer song.
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of got that same Beatles sound, that kind of British Invasion early 60s sound, and also with the vocal harmonies. I thought there'd be more harmonies on this track. There's not. They sing, Peter and Gordon sing a lot in unison.
Yeah.
So I thought there'd be a little bit more, but.
Yeah, that is strange. It's just don't allow the day, I think, in a harmony, but the rest of it's sort of like them singing together. It's very, very strange.
Yeah. This song was very popular, and I bet, in fact, I know some of the other cover versions, too, that there are some other people who did it as well.
Yeah, I just want one last thing before we shift to the Beatles Throwaways are another group's greatest all-time hit.
True.
Songs they didn't even want to touch. Like, this stinks. I don't want to sing Lock Me Away. Become some other group's number one all-time hit. And the song was covered something like 12 times just in 1964. Why do you think they used to do that so much, where there is a hit? And it seems to be only in, maybe it was the Beatlemania, but all that it's like, something Beatles related. And it's not like unheard of groups doing cover versions of it. It's like the Supremes, Del Shannon, Bobby Rydell, Patty Duke, all rushing out covers of the song. Isn't it very strange?
It is. I think it's what you said, though. I think they're capitalizing on any connection. You got to strike while the iron's hot, and the Beatles are the hot thing right now. So let's all cover a Beatles song and capitalize on their fame and ride the coattails. I wonder how many people actually knew that Paul McCartney wrote this song. Did they think, I'm such a Peter and Gordon fan, they're my favorite group ever, and now they're covering a Peter and Gordon song? And I wonder if people knew when the Supremes sang it, or Bobby Rydell, that this was actually a McCartney song.
Yeah. I wonder how much, too, if we just look at, because we've been mostly concentrating on Beatles.
Yeah.
Obviously. But if you look at any song in the 63, 64, 65 range that hits number one, how many cover versions it has in that year? I wonder if it's just a commonplace thing in the music industry where it's like, well, that's the number one hit. We better try to piggyback on it, which seems insane to me as a strategy, but
you think there's maybe a bunch of covers of Hang On Sloopy or something like that?
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
Yeah,
I don't know, but it's covered a whole bunch of times in 1964, and most of them are kind of like Del Shannon's, it sounds exactly the same, pretty much. The Supremes, obviously, that's probably like the best of the bunch, but Bobby Rydell, it's sort of most of these are shrug your shoulders
when... Bobby Rydell's version's way over the top. It's very pompous at the beginning, very dramatic sounding.
Lock me away.
Really giving it some depth. Yeah.
And the Supremes are the different. I liked the Supremes, obviously.
Yeah.
But I just found all of these versions wanting of the. Like I said, the clean, crisp, excellent recording of the original. They just did not cut the mustard.
To quote you, maybe, so I found some of the cover versions rather listless, in fact.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's sort of we're
It just.
missing something. Yeah.
And, I've said it too many times to repeat, but just doing the same song with the same, even probably like organ and all that,
Yeah.
like same instrumentation, everything. It's like, what are you even trying, guys?
Right.
So, with that in mind, some of the better covers, Joey Marshall from 1965, a really swanky version. So definitely give the Joey Marshall 1965 version a listen, because that's a good one. Jerry and the Pacemakers did this, but they
Oh.
did it in 1982. So
Talk
and it
about out
has
of touch.
yeah, so it has a really odd production and a really punchy guitar lick in there, which you're like, what is this? This is, I mean, they were trying something a little different, I think, but yeah, it just was sort of like them trying to. You know, any 60s act in the 80s was just totally lost.
Not good, not
And
good.
you can tell there. But I think the probably best cover version is a World Party. A World Party, they're best known for their song Under the Milky Way.
Oh, yeah.
Great song. And this is a very good version from 1992 from World Party. So
Okay.
check that one out for sure. I could only find a YouTube version that sort of like had a really bad picture,
Grainy, yeah.
grainy picture to it. But so I don't even think it's in like their regular catalog. I think it was probably something they recorded for a compilation or something like that. But very cool. Lola Coca has a pretty cool version.
Ooh, who's Lola
Lola Coca.
Coca?
I don't know other than that there's a version out there, but pretty good. There's a bunch of international versions of this, which you could probably understand with
Yeah.
the chord changes being the sort of like highlight of the thing.
Yeah.
The best of the bunch, I think, is the French version, Sheila. With Un Monde Sans Amour.
Ooh, I have to check out
Un
that one.
Monde Sans Amour. There's my French.
I'll
I don't know French, so
I'll check
that's
that
my
one
French.
out.
Our French fans, I know we have at least one longtime
Yes.
French fan that's probably like, oh my God, Chris is bad at French. Un Monde? Monde?
Monde.
Sans Amour. There we go.
Yeah, world
I think I
without
got that.
love. That's the translation.
Yeah, but as always, I pull a lot of these from secondhandsongs.com, which is just an excellent site to try to find cool cover versions. Man, I listen to a lot of bad ones. This
Yeah.
yeah.
Oof. Wow. But
So,
it's,
but
yeah.
yeah, other than the World Party one and the Joy Marshall, it's just not Lola Coca. The ones I mentioned, just. Even the Jerry and the Pacemakers ones,
Not great.
bad, bad.
No. In a way, I think you're hard pressed to do better than the original on this one just because it was recorded so well and so
Yeah.
cleanly, so yeah, just a great snapshot in 2 minutes and 30 seconds or something of just like perfect 1964 Beatle influenced sound, and it's sung well, played well, and
Yeah.
very much stands out when you hear it. So
Definitely a thumbs up for me, and I listening to it several times. I'd go back to the Beater and Gordon one, and I'd be like, and I listened to a couple live performances of Peter and Gordon too, but nothing like the original.
no.
So,
No, well, check it out, and we'll also put the link to the. There's only a very short fragment. Maybe Peter Asher has the full version, but only about 30 seconds of Paul singing it leaked out.
real. Grainy,
Yeah, that's right.
not good.
No, at least it's something. At least it shows that he really did write it, I guess. But yeah, we'll point that out. But otherwise, go check it out, and we'll. Go back into the lab another time, but it's fun to take a look at a Beatle-penned song and done differently by a different group. So it was a lot of fun. All
Yeah.
right, well, we'll be back at you soon with another episode, and until then, keep on listening.